How many of you thought that the whole idea of the Warsaw Ghetto was just a teaser? It's really not going to have anything to do with this.
Maybe it is now, since you forgot your notes.
What shaychus does the Warsaw Ghetto uprising have to the Seder, and why Bachal speak about the Warsaw Ghetto uprising? I couldn't believe it. Definitely made me feel ancient when I saw somebody reading the sign about it and asked me, what is the Warsaw Ghetto uprising? But what shaychus does it have to the Seder? Well, obviously there's the obvious connection. We know that it happened April 19th that year, when the Nazis, Yimach Shemam B'Zichrom, came in to make the roundup. It was the day of Pesach. That is when they came to do it. It was 75 years ago. That's what got me thinking about it. What ended up happening over there? And then we'll start to discuss the Seder. We know that that was the classical symbol and example of Jewish resistance. Throughout World War II, the Jews really did not resist. And I don't think anybody could blame them at all, because they were dehumanized, they were mamish made to be felt like less than human beings. In America, I remember hearing from a Yid in the Bronx that he once went to a hotel. It was actually in Lakewood. Years and years ago, he was a very old man when I was a very young man. And he said that they had a sign there: no Negroes, dogs, or Jews. So, and that was normal. Such a thing was not considered abnormal. And it was in that order, bedafka, to make the Jew feel even less than the dog. They also were helpless. And Baruch Hashem, our mahalach is not cherev. Hakol kol Yaakov, ayidayim yidei Esav. We don't work with cherev. We're not a umma of cherev. So it's not surprising that there was no resistance. But the exception to that rule was the Warsaw Ghetto. Warsaw Ghetto was 300,000, maybe 400,000 Jews in late 1939 were put into the Warsaw Ghetto, which was a very small area. Many of them died from epidemics and everything. And then by 1943, they started doing roundups and rounding up many of the Jews. By April 1943, there were about 75,000 Jews left, if that. And they were going to have a grand roundup to Treblinka. Until that point, the Jews did not really fight because they thought they were going to labor camps. But then when the word got back to them that it really was just a killing camp, they got together and there actually was a big split. If you're familiar with the Warsaw uprising, the ZOB and the ZZW, I think it was, there was the communist, leftist, socialist faction, which was the famous one that was Mordechai Anovitz. That was the main ones that resisted against. And then you had the more right wing, which was nothing so right wing, but just more right wing, wasn't communist or anything, that was, I believe, the ZZW. They had more connection to the Polish resistance. What ended up happening? So the Germans came in April 19th, and suddenly they are being attacked. There are Molotov cocktails being thrown at them. They have pistols, guns, and it's relatively very little that the Jews had. They had a couple of machine guns, a couple. It's like a joke, but they're giving it all they have, and they killed a lot of Nazis. How many Nazis? So I looked around a little bit. It sounds like anywhere between 16 and 300. That's how many Nazis they got. What was the end result? By the middle of May, maybe the end of May, within 4 to 6 weeks, it was all over. And finally, the Nazis came in well reinforced, and they burned down the ghetto. They shipped 55,000 off to Treblinka, and most of those Kedoshim met their deaths at Treblinka, and 13,000 they burnt right there in Warsaw, in the Warsaw ghetto. And anywhere from 16 to 300 Nazis had died. In the big picture, as valiant an effort as it was, and it took tremendous courage, it didn't make such a tremendous impact. If anything, there might have been lives lost because of it. Sobibor, we know that the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, took a much more aggressive approach and killed out many more, and they did this in Lublin and other places also. Whenever they started to get nervous of an uprising because of what happened in Warsaw. So were more Jews saved because of that uprising? I think even if you look at secular material, nobody will really say that any more Jews were saved. Less Jews maybe, but more Jews is very hard to argue. I don't think anybody argues that more Jews were saved because of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. Al pi hashkafa, was it the right thing or the wrong thing? So this is a great theological debate that we're just going to touch on, but not really get into fully. And the two names that I would put on this machlokes was Reb Nachum Zembe and Reb Yochanan Wasserman. Reb Yochanan Wasserman has a Maseira from the Chavetz Chaim in Kevitz Mamorim. He says that there is a litmus test. There's Chanukah Purim litmus test. If we are being threatened, a spiritual threat, then we are to fight. And that is the lesson of Chanukah. The Greeks were okay with us living, but they didn't want us to be Jews. What was the response? The Hashmonaim fought them physically. Haman didn't care whether we practiced Judaism or not. He was going to kill us. What was the response? Tshuva u'masim tovim. Lech k'naisis kol Yehudim v'tzumu olai was a different approach. And he says, I believe from the Chavetz Chaim, that that is always the litmus test, and he used it with regard to communism and the Nazis. He said, communism you should fight. I heard once from a very chashuv yid, that I think said this from Nassim Vachtfeigel, that a Maser, that the Chavetz Chaim was on his way to Moscow to go to war with the Kremlin. Sounds crazy. But he really wanted to take some yeshiva bachrim and let's go fight. And Reb Chaim Eizer convinced him not to. How he convinced him not to, I'm not sure. Chaim Eizer was a guy and he figured out how to convince him not to. I always wonder what would have happened had he gone. But the Chavetz Chaim held that you have to go to fight. The Nazis, they held fakert, you have to do tshuva. And it's known the Reb Yochanan went back to Baranovich. He was in America, he went back to Baranovich. And he gave a famous shmooze right before they were all killed in Baranovich, where he spoke about karbonis, making sure that a carbon is not pigle, we're being karbonis, and who knows who we're saving in America, who knows what's happening in America. That's going to be affected positively because of our karbonis. An amazing shmooze. Reb Menachem Zembe was known that he did support the resistance in the ghetto, in the Warsaw ghetto. The towering figure of the Warsaw ghetto, the two most famous that I am aware of, Reb Menachem Zembe was the Gadol. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, a Polish Gadol with all the Polish nuances. And his Sefer Tetzaveh Chaim on Shabbos, we don't have much of his Ksavim. Most of his, some of them, unfortunately, I believe, were burnt in the Warsaw Ghetto. But his Tetzaveh Chaim on Shabbos is unbelievable. It's like the sefer on Haitzah, on Yitzias Shabbos, on carrying on Shabbos. And he was pro it. I'm not sure the second person that's a very well-known person from the Varsha Ghetto was the Esh Kodesh, Koin Meskalman Shapiro. So he was also in the Varsha Ghetto, and it just recently a book came out giving the context of his drushes. His drushes came out a while ago, Esh Kodesh, but giving the context, he doesn't speak directly about what's going on. And there's a story that put together, I don't know if it's true or not true, but there is such a book out there. Okay, what does this have to do with the Seder? So before we go to the next step, I want to focus on what resistance we did in Mitzrayim. I was thinking about it. There's only one instance that I can think back to that is a case of resistance in Mitzrayim, and then we'll see how not resistant we were. Case of resistance, Shifra and Puah. They're told by Melech Mitzrayim, kill any child that you see, any Kol Zachar, kill them. And what do? They resisted. They didn't listen to him. It wasn't a violent fight, but they did resist. That's the only case of resistance. Where do we see that they did not have a great power of resistance? As they're running to Yamsuf, they're afraid. They're going into the raging sea. And they're chayas on the side, the Medrash tells us, and the Mitzrim are behind them. And they're literally between a rock and a hard place. They don't know where to go. Vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael, and they cry out to Hashem. Frek d'Eben Ezra. The Torah tells us, describes for us, what Mitzrayim was. Mitzrayim was coming with 600 strong chariots. Sheish me'ois rechev bachur. They had millions of Jews. Give it a fight. Frek d'Eben Ezra, why didn't they turn around and fight? Eben Ezra says because they were Ke'avadim Barchim. Maybe it's a Sporna. Ke'avadim Barchim. They had a slave mentality. They just were not able to do it. He doesn't say because they knew Alpi Ruach HaKadosh that they wouldn't be successful. They probably would not have been successful. But they weren't going to do it because that wasn't in their mentality at all. They were slaves of the masters and they didn't see themselves in that way. They just couldn't fight. So clearly, we didn't have such resistance there. So, what are we supposed to be experiencing, Lel HaSeder? We know that Lel HaSeder has to be very real today as well. And that's what we're going to get into now. And we're going to make a contrast. That the success of Klal Yisrael has not been, historically, through resistance. Unfortunately, we've been through a lot. In fact, in the middle of Magid, one of the highlights of Magid, V'hi sha'omda laveseinu, shaloy echad bilvad, it's an unbelievable song. Like we, and some people have very lebedika songs, and we're holding the case to say Shira alayayin. This is what stood for us throughout the ages. Not once. They always try to kill us. And the Baal HaGadol knew 2,000 years ago you could put that in and it would still be true. Chol dar v'dar oimdim aleinu l'chaloseinu shelo yechad bilvad v'akadosh baruch hu matzleinu miyadam. Resistance is not very successful. Certainly when you're dealing with a physical sakana, we don't have that good of a record as far as resistance. What we do have an unbelievable record with is survival. Not just survival, but thriving after having survived. And that's what we're going to focus on tonight. There's a famous maisa brought down in the Haggadah. Maisa b'Rabbi Elazar, v'Rabbi Yeshua, v'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, v'Rabbi Akiva, v'Rabbi Tarfon, she'im misubim b'bnei Brak. There was a story with Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Tarfon that were all in Bnei Brak. V'yimisaprim b'yitzias Mitzrayim kol ha'isa halayla, and they're saying over the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim the whole night. Ad shebo talmideim, until the talmidim come. V'amru lehem, and they say, Rabbi Seinu, higiyas man kriya shma shachris. Sun up, it's time to stop. And there's a famous kasha. One of the Tanayim mentioned here is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is of the opinion, the last machlokes, maybe second to last machlokes in Pesachim, is the machlokes Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says that Pesach Nechal ad Chatzos, that the end time for Pesach, for the Korban Pesach, is Chatzos. Many Mefarshim say, if Pesach ends at Chatzos, Yitzias Tzipri, Yitzias Mitzrayim ends then. Because it has to be B'shar Shematu Mar Menachem Mifanecha. It's B'zman the Mitzvah. So the whole Mitzvah of Tzipri, Yitzias Mitzrayim is only until the end time. If you have to be done after Kemet, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah B'chatzos, that's when Tzipri, Yitzias Mitzrayim ends. If that's when Tzipri, Yitzias Mitzrayim ends, why was he up a whole night? You should have told him after Chatzos, or his Tamidim should have come along and said, it's Chatzos, let's go. Did he not realize the entire night that he was already past Chatzos? And some of the Mefarshim explain because he was Ba'asra Demara. There was a Mor Da'asra here. That's why the Baal Haggadah tells us, Shayim Misubim B'Bnei Brak. They weren't just sitting any place. Where did he live? I believe he lived in Lud. He lived in a different town in Eretz Yisrael. But where were they now? Right now, they were in Bnei Brak. Who was the Mar of the Asra in Bnei Brak? Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was the Mar of the Asra of Bnei Brak. Rabbi Akiva is the one that holds Kol HaLayla. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, in spite of holding that really Tzipri Yetzias Mitzrayim is only till Chatzos, he does it the whole night because when in Rome, do as the Romans. When you're in Bnei Brak, what? No? What?
Yom Tov Shein
Shabbos. Oh. Right. I shouldn't. I forgot who I'm talking to. So, when in Bnei Brak, he does as Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva goes all night, he goes all night. But now it just takes our question a step further. Why did he go to Rabbi Akiva? Why was he in Bnei Brak? Furthermore, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua were a baim of Rabbi Akiva. They're almost a door ahead of Rabbi Akiva. Why are they going to Rabbi Akiva? If anything, Rabbi Akiva should go to them.
Rabbi Akiva wanted to fight.
Why did they go to Rabbi Akiva?
He wanted to fight.
Zucked. That's not why.
And they wanted to... That's something that I heard, that there was a conversation about how to react to the Romans at the Seder. And that was why the leaders of the generation were coming together to discuss.
I'm unaware of that. I would want to see the Marmachemus for that. We would like to suggest the following pshat. And I think I probably heard this once, but it's in my memory for many years. I'm not sure where I got it from. The Gemara, famous Gemara in the end of Makkos. The Gemara says, Kfar Hoyu, Rabbi Elazar, Biankiv, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Akiva, Hayu Mahalchen. They were going, and they walked by the ruins of the Beis HaMikdash. And all of them were crying. Going by, and it's fresh, it's shortly after the Korban Beis HaMikdash. And they see shualim hilchubai, they see stray wolves roaming about freely in the makam where you had marakayin, the makam where you had avodah se mekipurim, the makam where you had simchas beis hasha'eva, where you had the greatest expression of shechina. And now, shualim hilchubai. And they're crying. And Rabbi Kiva, we're all familiar with it. If you didn't learn it, you've heard the same. Rabbi Kiva Masachik. Rabbi Kiva's laughing. They asked him, Rabbi Kiva, why are you laughing? He said, why are you crying? He said, why are we crying? We're walking by the Makom Beis HaMikdash and we see stray wolves roaming about and we shouldn't cry? Why are you laughing? And he says, if I see the nevuah of the Churban Kayim, I know that the nevuah of the Asid will also be Kayim. If this nevuah happened, so too that nevuah will happen. Rabbi Akiva, though, didn't answer the question completely. It's true he knows that eventually there will be a Geula. Ebishter Zalhofen. But right now, how can you laugh? Right now, how can you smile? Right now, you're in a matzav of Churban. Right now, there was a Churban Beis HaMikdash. Shu'olim Hilchubai. How does he smile? How does he laugh? Rabbi Kiva showed in that episode that he had the ability to go far and beyond the physical reality around him. And in spite of what around him seeming to be complete devastation, it would seem to be a situation where anybody can give up. And many even did give up after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. It was very, very hard. It was very challenging to go from pre-Churban to post-Churban. We can't fathom what that was. Rabbi Kiva, though, is able to relate to Azman of La'asid Lavai. He's able to see the future. He's able to focus on the future. And the future gives him kayach at that moment to survive. Not only to survive, but to thrive. The same Rabbi Akiva, we know, went through another such episode. 40 years old, he started to learn, which that in and of itself is unbelievable. He was an Am Aretz until that point. He said, until that point, if I would have seen a Talmud Chacham Ayisi Noishche, I would have bit him. That probably has to do with Hakeas Shinov. But bit the Talmud Chacham. And we know his wife convinced him to go learn, and he learns for 24 years straight, and then he ends up having 24,000 Talmidim. V'kulam meisu b'perek echad, and all of them die in a month and 3 days. It's hard to fathom such a reality. He's a Rebbe of Talmidim. He definitely feels for each Talmud. And he has more than any yeshiva. We have the biggest yeshivas in millennia. And he had much bigger than any of them. He had 24,000 Talmidim. And all of them are nifter in a month. What does he do? Vayayim shamed. Marin Yvamis tells us. The world was dark, was desolate, was empty. It was complete devastation to the Torah world. Ad Shabaladarim, until he came to the south of Eretz Yisrael, and he found Hamisha Talmidim Shabadarim. Found five Talmidim. Now imagine going over to somebody that's a Rosh Yeshiva of, I don't want to say names of yeshivas because I don't want to connect it, but you in your mind can do it. Being the Rosh Yeshiva of the greatest yeshivas, all combined, 24,000 Talmidim. He is the top. All out in 1 month. They're all gone. Now, you have a nice yeshiva. How many bachrim do you have in the yeshiva? Five bachrim. You know what? I'll give you $1 for each bachr if he comes collecting, right? Well, somebody comes to you, five bachrim. A lot of people probably think, like, why do you have a yeshiva? Five bachrim? and he's able to devote his life now. He was already an old man, right? He was 40 when he started, 24 years of learning. Then he got 24,000 Talmidim. We don't know how many years it was at that point, but he certainly could have collected Social Security. And he goes ahead and he starts again with 5 Talmidim. What gives him that kayach to do it? Perhaps it's the same kayach. He's not living in the reality that is the physical reality around him. He sees the potential. He sees the future. He sees what is going to be. And he can live in a world that is different than the world immediately around him physically. And he's living that. He's mesachik. He's giving over Torah b'chol koichai to those 5 Talmidim. And all Torah that we have today, the Gemara tells us, Stam Mishnah Reb Meir, Stam Sefri, maybe Reb Tarfon, I forgot which one. L'chulam alibad Rabbi Akiva. All of it is Rabbi Akiva. Torah Shebaal Peh, he's the most of Torah Shebaal Peh. To the point that Moshe Rabbeinu said, give Torah Shebaksav also through him. How did he do it with these 5 Talmidim? What enables a person to do that? Because he's able to see the future. He's able to live beyond his present state. Perhaps it was because of that reason that they all came to Bnei Brak. Why is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and everybody come to Bnei Brak? Because they walked by the Makom HaMikdash with him. They saw our present day reality. We're stuck in what's real. He was able to go above that. On Lel Pesach, what is our chiyuv? The Rambam tells us, Zochar kinyan shenema zochar esim hashabbos lekadshei. You have to, a mitzvah of zochar just as it says, zochar esim hashabbos lekadshei, that you have to remember Shabbos. What does the Rambam want with that? A number of the Mefarshim ask it. What is the Rambam connecting it to Shabbos? Perhaps the Rambam is trying to tell us that it's not just to remember. We have to relive Yitzias Mitzrayim. The Rambam, we say in the Haggadah, Afilu kulonu chachamim, kulonu nevonim, kulonu yedim es ha-teira, mitzvah aleinu l'saper, cholomar b'l'saper reizim meshubach. Obvious question. Even if you're Reb Chaim Kanevsky, you have to put on tefillin every day. Of course. So even if you're chacham and an oven, you have to do Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. What's the chiddush? So the answer would seem to be simple, because one might think that the point of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim is to get to know the story. But if you know the story already, what do you have to spend time on it? What do you have to review it? You know it. He knows the story. He knows all the midrashim. He knows the whole thing. So kulanu chacham, kulanu nevanim, kulanu yedim es ha-Torah. Why do we have to do it? We have to teach it to those that don't know. But those of us that do know, what do we have to go through the story again? So what's taka the answer? Why do you have to go through it? So I once heard from my father, he said that the Rambam in the end of Hilchas Chagiga, when he's telling us the mitzvah of Hakel, says, afilu chachamim gedolim shiyedim kol ha-Torah kula, even great chachamim that know the entire Torah, chayovin l'shmoya b'kavona gedoli yisera, have to come and listen to Sefer Devarim by Hakel from the Melech, and they have to listen with great concentration. Shaloikova hakosuv ela l'chazik daso emes v'yira atzmoy kilu aton etzavaba umipi advura shama. Because the purpose of Hakel is not just to get to know Torah. It's an experiential mitzvah. It's to experience Matan Torah. Liros atzmai kilu atan etzavaba umipi agvura shama. The mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim on Lel Pesach is not just to say information, it's to relive it. So if they wanted to relive a Yitzias Mitzrayim, it's one of the hardest mitzvahs. We do actions to try to act it out. But how does one really feel like he's getting out of Mitzrayim? So they felt they have to go to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is the person that is able to live in a world that is beyond the reality that he's in. We might be in the middle of a golos. We don't see ourselves going out Mishibud L'Gu'ula like that. But Rabbi Akiva, if he in the middle of Churban is able to be Mesachik, if he experiences a Sfiras HaOmer and he's able to go on teaching, he's able to see a Yetzias Mitzrayim even in a matzav of Golus, even in that matzav of post-Churban Beis HaMikdash, where it was so dark. How are you supposed to feel like you're leaving Mitzrayim? How are you supposed to feel redemption? Rabbi Akiva is the only one that has a shot at it. Getting back to what we started with, resistance was not very successful. And even Bar Kochba, when others went with Bar Kochba and thought that Bar Kochba might have a chance at being Mashiach, Bar Kochba wasn't successful. What has been unbelievably successful, think about the survivors of the Mohama. Think about those people that came out of World War II. Think about the emotional strength that so many of them had to show. It's not a question of whether we're going to go through those situations or not. To some degree or another, there are difficulties that we're going to face. The question is how we react. It's not whether we're going to resist. The greatest heroism is seen in the post-trauma. After that situation, that there were Yidden that lived through it and their entire families were decimated. They went through Gehenna for 6 years. And they decide they're going to rebuild. They're going to have children. They're going to be from Yidden. Once heard from Yid Rabbi Chiel Granitstein, a lot of stories from him, but he was a partisan. He went through 6 years of the Mohama in his formative years. He was 15 when the war started. And when he came out of the forest, he was with the Russian partisans. It was, I think, the end of February, maybe March of 45, before everybody else was. He went back to Lodz. He said it was the most depressing time of his life. He grew up in Lodz. He thought that Lodz was where Jews lived. There were some Jews in Warsaw and a couple of Jews in other places, but normal Jews live in Lodz. That's the way he grew up. And there were 250,000 Jews in Lodz. And he was sure that he'd come back and there would still be 100,000 Jews there. Some said he came back to Lodz. There was not a minion of Jews because even the Jews that did survive didn't come back yet to Lodz. He was from the first because they had shortwave radios. They were with the Russians. They knew where the Russians had come in already. And Lodz was liberated somewhat early. The concentration camps had not yet been liberated. And he comes back and there was not even a minion. And what did he do? He started Pirchei Agudas Yisrael, or Pele Agudas Yisrael. He started to get together an Aguda and got any youth that would come back to build up Kal Yisrael. The emotional strength that it takes not to throw in the towel at that point and to decide we're going to rebuild. The strength that it took for Yidden, they couldn't speak a word of English. In the 1980s, they still couldn't speak a word of English. And they came here after losing everything and decided we're going to build yeshivas, we're going to build schools, we're going to raise our children from, we're going to be Shemir Shabbos. That was towering strength. That is where the success lies. What effect the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising had on Klal Yisrael is very questionable. Aside from the Hashkafa that we discussed before, but as we mentioned, even the secular sources, almost everybody agrees that in bottom line numbers, factually speaking, it was at best negligible positive. But the attitude of the people that did endure, of the people that went through such horrors, and still they were able to come out, and they definitely were harmed emotionally, but they decided they're going to continue. That's what we're saying by the Seder. B'chol dar v'dar, it always happens. And this is the story of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps us and how Klal Yisrael utilizes that moment. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim, it was a tremendous gula on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's part. But we know that there were people in America that were slaves, and they were freed 150 years ago. And they're still complaining that they're suffering a handicap because they were slaves. We were at Har Sinai 7 weeks later. We became the chosen people 7 weeks later. We walked out with an attitude, we are going to thrive. We are going to survive. We're not going to say we just went through 210 years of terrible situations and therefore forget it, I can't deal with it. Regardless of what we might have endured, we are going to thrive. This is very negea for everybody around the Seder, even on a personal level. Today, more than ever, people endure emotional stresses, and people have emotional difficulties with so many different things. There are people that parental issues from when they grew up or really haunt them. For whatever reason it is, whether the world is a less healthy world, whether the emotions aren't as strong as they used to be, a message to give over at the Seder is that the godless, part of the godless of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of course we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he took us out of Mitzrayim, but part of what we should emulate, part of what we should try to copy, is the response that Klal Yisrael did throughout the ages. Whether it was a Churban Beis HaMikdash, we weren't like the Greeks that just got lost. We weren't like the Romans that fell off the face of the earth. We stuck to Torah and Mitzvahs, and those that stuck to Torah and Mitzvahs through thick and thin, personal and national, they were the heroes that kept Klal Yisrael going. That is the greatest form of Hatzalah for Klal Yisrael. That's what helped Klal Yisrael survive. Resistance, they're Kedoshim. They definitely are Kedoshim, those that died in the Warsaw Ghetto. And they definitely had the best intentions in mind. And they definitely, if they saved any Jews, whoever they saved, was unbelievable. But the lesson for us to learn is, whatever we go through, continue to survive, continue to thrive. Whatever a person goes through, whatever nation goes through, to follow Rabbi Kiva's Mahalach. Just end off with one story, which some of you might have heard. Eric Solowich said it before Rosh Hashanah time at Charles Schuttis in the Shtiebel. And unbelievable. His father-in-law, Rabbi Shalom Yosef Kazin, was in a concentration camp, a labor camp, called Klugge. And it was Rosh Hashanah of Tafshin Hay, the end of 1944. And it was all the way in the east, I think it was in Russia. And the Germans were already on the retreat, and they knew that the Russians were taking over that part, whether it was Eastern Poland or Belarus or wherever it was, that part was being taken over by the Russians. So they had a retreat. They didn't want to leave any Jews alive. And I believe he said that there were 5,500 inmates, of which 36 survived the next 2 days. The next day and a half, they took them all out and they killed every one of them. And they just left them there. They didn't have time for them to dig or anything. They just left them all dead. And the Nazis went off, and these 36 hid between floors or wherever they hid and miraculously escaped. And Reb Shalom Yosef Kazin, who was here in Cleveland, was one of those 36. The next day, the Russians came in. The Russians gave them food. The Russians wanted to take them back, help them out, clothe them, and take care of them. Reb Shalom Yosef Kazin said to the other 35 people and to the Russians that came, said, I'm asking you a favor, rather than us go back, please bring us more food, because we have work to do. We are not going to leave with all these corpses not buried. And he told the other Eden, we are going to do Kibrei Yisrael now. And they started to dig mass graves and to bury 5,500 Yidden. These were Yidden that had gone through years of labor camp. They had every hetter in the book. They can't. What are they supposed to do? For the next month, rather than say, I can't anymore, I have to get out to the free world, for the next month they stayed in Kloga and they were burying the people that were dead. They weren't saving everybody. But that was the greatest expression of the strength of Klal Yisrael. The greatest strength of Klal Yisrael is when we recognize the emes, that everything is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that Terasai is Teras Emes. And under all different situations, we try to follow that role model of Rabbi Akiva, of looking to the brightness of the future, and being able to include a line like Vehi She'amda Aleinu Shalei Echad Bilvad El B'chol Darv Dar Emdim Aleinu L'Halei Seinu as part of our Shira Al Hayayin. Thank you.